From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie, and welcome to Coast to Coast AM. Later tonight, those open lines. Here's what's happening. Well, the U.S. says it will reopen 18 of the 19 embassies and consulates that had recently closed due to security threats. The State Department says its embassy in the Yemeni capital will stay closed because of some ongoing concerns there. Now, the U.S. closed 19 diplomatic missions in the Middle East and Africa last Sunday in response to what it said was a threat of a terrorist attack. Camels could be responsible for passing to humans that deadly MERS coronavirus that emerged last year. Tests have shown that MERS, which stands for Middle East Respiratory Syndrome Virus, has been circulating in the animals, offering a potential route for that spread. Researchers studying the hormone oxytocin have discovered that it could have an important role in autism. Their findings contradicted initial assumptions about how the hormone would affect the brain in autistic patients. Now, a research team from New York University's Medical Center found that oxytocin, a neurohormone that occurs naturally in the brain, reduces background noises that make it difficult for individuals with autism to focus and enhances their ability to receive desirable information processing signals. Now, for years, Dr. John Gray has been telling us about this natural hormone. John, and you are spot on, my friend. How are you?
It's so good to talk to you. I'm doing great.
Good. So this hormone does more than just memory and depression. It looks like it's helping people who are autistic.
Well, it particularly helps women lower their stress levels. It also allows women to have orgasm. But it's a social hormone. It's the love hormone. It's the cuddle hormone. And it's when you have eye contact with someone, it's oxytocin is being released. And you'll see autistic children, they have a very difficult time having eye contact. They're not able to sustain their attention in that way, in a personal way. They can often sustain attention in an impersonal way, like with objects, manipulation of objects. And that's the left side of the brain. But the right side of the brain has to do with personal interactions. And that part of the brain's not working too well for them. So the hormone oxytocin has tremendous promise in that case. In addition, for men who sometimes know nothing about connecting with their wives, sometimes it's helpful there. And certainly the obvious is for some women who have never learned to climax, it can help them experience how to do that and then become motivated in their life to do those behaviors that I've been talking about for years that will actually help the body stimulate more oxytocin.
John, what causes the oxytocin to really be depleted in some people?
First of all, when you have an autistic child, the brain's not making it because there's inflammation in the brain. There's an infection in the brain causes inflammation, which is why, you know, many researchers believe that vaccinations have something to do with it because they're putting a bacterium into the blood, which causes infection. And unfortunately, many doctors still recommend parents to take a fever reducer rather than allowing the fever to run, which would actually kill the bacteria and the child wouldn't have autism. The amazing thing is that parents are now reporting with their autistic children when the children get the flu and have a fever, the symptoms of autism completely disappear. And that's because fever will kill the bacteria. Unfortunately, the autism comes back because when you kill the bacteria with a fever, a short fever, what will occur is the bacteria have already laid eggs. Mm. And so the eggs hatch and the inflammation comes back. But this is tremendous promise, huge breakthrough in terms of autism that they're slowly discovering. I've been teaching this now 10 years.
Dr. John Gray's website, marsvenus.com. Thank you, John. Well, we all know that garlic keeps away vampires and other people, right? But according to a new study by researchers in China, consuming raw garlic might actually help prevent lung cancer along with other various chronic health problems. Researchers believe that raw garlic's benefits are connected to a chemical called allicin, which is released once raw garlic is smashed or diced. This chemical is believed to not only reduce inflammation, but also reduce damage from the free radicals to the body's cells. How about that story? Put out the lawn chair, set the alarm while you gaze into the night sky. The year's best shooting star show has started. August's annual Perseids. Meteor shower peaks on Sunday and Monday, promising perhaps 70 meteors an hour, and that is amazing. Who watches those skies for us? None other than Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Stephen, this is going to be one heck of a shower.
Oh, George, it's so exciting to be with you and the Coast listeners. This weekend, no matter where you are listening to Coast folks, pay attention. Look into the northeast sky, George, and everybody else to follow. The constellation Perseus rises in that area a little after 10 o'clock in the evening, and you can expect with clear skies, George, when the moon is not in the sky at this time of the month, a really good show. And here's another good tip that's coming to us throughout the Internet. Earth-grazing Perseids. What's that? These are bright fireballs. The Perseid meteor shower is known, George, for a high number of fireballs. So around 9:30 to 10:30 each evening until the peak, Sunday night's the peak into Monday morning, but the peak activity increases, you may, if you're sitting in that lawn chair, get to see this most amazing fireball-like object from the Perseids called Perseid Earth Grazers.
Uh-huh.
This is amazing stuff, a great show, George, and we have an update up at drsky.com on the front page for folks that would like to learn so much more about it.
And I hear, Stephen, they're zipping along at 134,000 miles an hour?
You said it, George. That is incredible. And the more incredible fact is that these are average size, about the size of a grain of beach sand, which is an incredulous thing. And, well, George, if it goes like it did last year, and hopefully we'll see this meteor shower at an all-time high, I would like to hear what the listeners have to say. I'm sure they'll be chiming in.
You got it. Thank you, Stephen. We're going to open up in a moment the Black Vault. What's inside? John Greenwald joins me next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie, one of the hardest working persons in the field of ufology and investigations. John Greenwald hosting the popular website, theblackvault.com. Over 440,000 pages, probably more by now. It is the largest online database of the U.S. government documents in the world. You've probably seen John. He's all over the place these days. History Channel, Discovery, you name it. John, welcome back. How are you?
I appreciate it. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
You know what? When you started this, how old were you?
I was 15 years old. This month is actually 17 years. I hate to age myself. But 17 years of doing the Black Vault. And actually, I just surpassed 700,000 declassified pages online. So it's getting quite massive at this point.
How quickly did those 17 years go by, John?
It's sad to say too quickly. It really just zoomed by. I just kind of sometimes forget how long I've been doing it and realize now that I've been doing this research and kind of diving into pretty much every government secret you could ever imagine for now more than half of my life.
That's great. John, go ahead.
No, I feel old at this point.
You're not that old compared to us. Brand new listeners, tell them about the Black Vault.
Well, the blackvault.com was, like you said, something that I started 17 years ago now. And the short of it is it started as an archive for declassified government documents. The most popular subject was UFOs, and that's really kind of how I became known, so to speak, in the field, is that I was able to receive literally tens of thousands of records of these declassified documents. Now, when I was 15, I was, just a punk little kid trying to discover what the government secrets were, and was kind of amazed that there was no website out there at the time that was really archiving any government documents, let alone, especially these UFO documents that I thought were out there, and I wanted to get my hands on them, but I didn't know how, and learned what this Freedom of Information Act was and started filing FOIA requests and or Freedom of Information Act requests, and all of a sudden, I was getting these thousands and thousands of pages into my mailbox, and I knew, hey, if I was interested in this, if I was looking for a resource for this, then there had to be other people out there, too. So I literally started taking these pages and typing them in by hand when I was 15 and started putting them online. And since then, the blackvault.com has grown, obviously bought a scanner since then once I could afford one. And started putting these documents online, and it quickly became, from what I understand, the largest private collection of declassified documents in the world. I'm the only guy that runs the site. It's only me. And so it's been kind of a long 17 years, but like you asked, it has gone very, very quickly. But it's a journey that it changes every day. It started as this archive, but then all of a sudden has morphed into this much bigger endeavor that I never even thought would come about. And that includes quite a few other features. Now I'm serving about 7,000-8,000 people a day. The last month and a half has been insane, traffic-wise, 12,000 to 15,000 people on some of the peak days now. And for me, without paying a penny in advertising, it's just word of mouth. I'm pretty happy with those numbers. So it's going good. It's been a long journey, but one that I know I'm not giving up on anytime soon.
John, can you tell what people are trying to look for? At least, go ahead.
Yeah, I can. It's amazing too to see what people's interests are. UFOs has always been number one. It's always been the most popular topic. And again, that's what I mostly talk about on the radio and talk about on television. It's one of my personal favorites. But I think to the general public, out of every government secret that's out there, I think that that's one of the most fascinating ones. So that's really what I see as the most popular topic on the Black Vault. But there's other topics as well that really do kind of rank the highest. And I've gotten a lot of records that come up with the keyword of New World Order. And obviously that's kind of a buzzword this day and age. And there surprisingly are a lot of documents out there that talk about the New World Order and what did George Herbert Walker Bush mean when he said that. And that's a big topic of discussion. So I've got quite a few documents on that. And really, it also changes from day to day. 1 month, declassified United States Army field manuals will be popular. For like 2 years, the manual for the 50 caliber sniper rifle was like the number one downloaded document on my site. Why? I have no idea. I don't know if I should be excited to learn that or scared.
Really?
But there were, you know, hundreds of thousands of downloads on that one document. So it's amazing to see because it changes every month what people are interested in.
Have there been some documents, John, that were just absolutely riveting that you were able to find?
Yes, and it's kind of hard to pick one. Even zoning in on one topic, it's hard to pick. Staying with UFOs, you know, I think there's quite a few that have come about that really kind of make you scratch your head and go, okay, if the government really wants you to believe that UFOs are easily explainable, that they haven't taken an interest in these in this phenomena since 1969 when they closed their investigation, when you take all of that into consideration and you think or operate off the assumption that the government is telling the truth, the moment you start looking at these documents, you don't even really have to pick one. You could just kind of look at a few of them and realize, you know what, there is a massive cover-up when it comes to the UFO phenomena, and it didn't stop in 1969 like they want you to believe. That's one of the biggest lies that I think is very, very provable by using their own records, by using their own documents, and I think that that is really kind of the focal point of what the Black Vault is and what my research is, to show that they are capable of covering things up for decades, not even with just UFOs. You'll see quite a few topics when you go to the research center of the Black Vault, where all the 700,000 pages are housed. It's not just UFOs. You look at it as a whole, and there are thousands of pages that shouldn't even exist on UFOs, just dealing with that topic. So out of these thousands of pages, you look at them, number one, they're not supposed to exist. But number two, for me, someone who's investigated almost every government secret that's out there, UFOs has remained the number one most difficult topic to research for me.
Why is that?
And I don't know. Your guess is as good as mine, but I think that that's a very big piece of evidence. You know, it's not necessarily documentary evidence, but it's something that you got to look at and go, why can I find declassified information on nuclear weapons or biological weapons or you know, name the secret? Why is it easier for me to see or find something like that or have the government look for it versus asking for UFO information? Now, somebody skeptical may say, well, because they don't want to deal with somebody like me, because UFOs are all bunk and they're easily explainable and it's a waste of time. But au contraire, there's actually heavily top secret documents that exist and that were created just in the last 10 years that are completely blacked out from top to bottom. And the reason why, because they do tell you the reason that they black out information. There's about six exemptions under the Freedom of Information Act why they black out those records. So you might look at it as just blacked out information. There is a little bit of method to the madness. They do tell you why. And what's interesting about these top secret records is they use the very first exemption, which is information that could be a threat to national security. All right, so that's another key point and key piece of evidence that you've got to really kind of comprehend to understand what they could be covering up. So what then could be so top secret about the UFO phenomena that it could be a threat to national security? And a lot of people will argue with me saying, oh, well, you know, the government has a lot of top secret aircraft, and that could really be the explanation for what these UFOs are. And they're absolutely right, but they're wrong on one key point. It has nothing to do with those government documents, because they wouldn't be UFOs. They wouldn't be unidentified, and they would never come up during the course of searching for records for my request. Now, they're absolutely right if Joe down the street sees a UFO or takes a video of a black triangle streaking across the sky. I absolutely would believe that that's a top secret aircraft, sure, of some kind. And I think that a lot of UFOs that are seen photographed and videoed today are explainable by earthly explanation. But when you deal with the government documentation, when a military pilot who's seeing a UFO and has no idea what it is, and the government has no idea what it is, and the intelligence community has no idea what it is, that is something that's very big. And that's a big piece of evidence that I think is largely overlooked by the skeptics, because they always have their very, you know, quick and snippy remarks about coming back and saying, well, it's X, Y, or Z. And they try very hard to make all of us researchers or investigators that truly are trying to find and uncover whatever the truth may be, whatever it may be. They're quick to have those remarks, but they can't deal with the fact that the United States military itself is seeing this phenomenon and can't explain it. And I have yet to this day heard any reasonable or rational explanation to deal with that.
Jonathan, a few weeks ago, there was a bizarre discovery in the Persian Gulf. You were part of that, weren't you, in some form, creature? What happened?
I didn't know I would be a part of it, but boy, did I get kind of raveled in that. The quick backstory is that a story appeared online and then was submitted to the blackvault.com about a, like you said, mysterious creature. And as the major media outlets started to pick it up, they said that it was seen by the Iranian Navy, discovered by the Iranian Navy, that a naval vessel went up to this thing, whatever it was. They snapped a few pictures, and on the Internet it went. Well, it was submitted to the Black Vault, and I put the pictures online. And for whatever reason, the case file just exploded on my site. That's one of the other sections of my site that I offer people to upload and share their case files, whether it be a UFO sighting or photo or video or a mysterious animal that they may have seen, in this case, like a cryptozoology case or a chemtrail sighting. So there's a bunch of different categories that I invite people to upload their information. And this was sent to me anonymously. I had no idea who sent it. So I put it online. And after a couple of days, like I said, it just exploded. Almost 10,000 people downloaded this thing in like 72 hours. Right? So it was an incredible, I've never seen that. It was number one on the case file list. And so I thought, okay, well, I don't know how I got wrangled into this and where all this traffic was coming from. But then out of the blue, the actual photographer that took the photos in the Persian Gulf wrote me out of nowhere. And as far as I know, and please correct me if I'm wrong, I was the only one that actually did a small interview with him.
I think you were.
Yeah, and I had to figure out, you know, what was going on. And sure enough, the mainstream media, those outlets that actually picked up the story and were saying it was in the Iranian Navy and so on, none of it was true. They also tried to claim that there was an expert that was brought in and they identified it as a whale carcass. Also not true. So this photographer, he wrote me, proved who he was. He actually sent me the high-resolution photos, which weren't available anywhere else. And I looked long and hard just to make sure that he wasn't trying to be the photographer. He wasn't. He proved who he was. He even sent me photos of this creature from taken by the captain of the ship. It was not a naval vessel. It was just regular commercial vessel at sea. The short of it is that in the course of doing the interview with him and kind of learning a little bit more about his backstory, he's been at sea for about 7 or 8 years, had never seen anything like this before. The captain had never seen anything like this before.
Hold on for a second, John. We're going to take this break, come back, and talk a little bit more about this sea creature. We'll be back. And welcome back to Coast, John Greenwald with us, theblackvault.com. John, this creature, if it's not a whale, what do you think it could be?
I don't know. And the photographer and the captain of the boat said that they had never seen anything like it, nor could they identify it, nor did they believe that it was a whale. What was cool about what his responses were like, though, was that he was very open to it being, you know, an earthly explanation, meaning if it was a whale, great, but you show me the proof kind of thing. And but he really just didn't think that that's what it was, nor did anyone on that boat. I tried to make it easy for everybody to find. I know the site's a little slow right now because you've got a heck of an audience. But if you do go to theblackvault.com, if you click on sightings/cases in the menu, it's a featured case. It's the only one, actually, because I figured we'd be talking about it. So just click on featured. But again, it might take a second to load. But you can download the high-resolution images. One of the great things about the case file database is anybody, once they register on the site or even use their Facebook account, they can post their ideas and thoughts. You'll see quite a few that have been posted already. And really, that's what the site's all about, is to be a collaborative effort of researchers, investigators, and curious minds. And if somebody's got an explanation, by all means post it. But I've seen everything from a whale to a giant squid to an alligator to, you name it, it's being posted out there. But really, nobody can show anything as an example that proves what it is. So at this point, it just remains a mystery.
John, it looks to me like it has some kind of deformed tail. Could it be a plesiosaur, an old dinosaur?
Again, your guess is as good as mine. I think that's what's intriguing about it, is because, you know, you do have all of these, you know, possibilities of what it could be. And I think, as looking at the topic with a broader scope, I think when you realize how many discoveries science is still making today, every day there's a major discovery made. I ran a story on the Black Vault a few weeks ago that was about a virus that it was kind of a class of virus, or class of life form, I should say, that had never really been discovered before. And it was like kind of a new life form that scientists were just kind of unraveling. And my whole point in that is that there's so much about this planet that we just don't understand. Even the smartest scientists, and no disrespect to them, the smartest scientists can't unravel some of Earth's biggest mysteries. And that's just our planet. And that's why I get a kick out of some of the scientists who are so adamant about knowing what's outside of our planet and what's not outside our planet. I think that we have a lot to learn. So I really don't have an answer on this one. I kind of throw it out there and allow everybody to post their thoughts. I know there are a lot of people out there that spend a lot of time at sea. So if anybody has seen a floating dead whale carcass, by all means post it. I heard one rebuttal to that I thought was great, that once, you know, a whale dies, and yes, it may float for a certain amount of time, but once all the air evaporates, that thing is going to sink. So would it be floating this amount of time for it to decay and for it to rot like this thing was? And that was actually one of the things that the photographer stressed about this object, or this creature, I should say, is that it just smelled to high heaven. He said that they only stayed in the vicinity of it for about an hour before they left.
And there's there isn't any Photoshop here either.
No, I really don't buy that. I know that this was definitely a creature there, whale or not, it doesn't matter. I don't really buy that there was any photoshopping or trickery here. It's definitely there. The question mark is, what is it? And I don't think anybody can identify it. And just my final point on it is, that's what kind of frustrates me about the mainstream media, that wants to talk about a story like this, which is great, but when they get almost every fact about it wrong, including the false identification of it, it kind of irks me, because, you know, there are people out there that are curious about this stuff, and then they read that it's been identified as a whale carcass, and then you just kind of dismiss it.
No, I agree.
That's not right.
I mean, they could just as easily say some think it's a whale carcass, but we don't know. You could leave it like that.
Yep. But none of them did, and they all ran kind of the same worded story, which also shows you another problem with the media, and that is that one of them will run that story, and then the other one will take the facts from that story and just rewrite them a little bit and have the same gist of the story and post that, and then another one, and then another one. And so you have the same general story, but if the root is wrong, then all of them are wrong. And then, you know, us as the public, we have to decide, okay, well, what's the truth? And I think that this goes well beyond just this one particular case we're talking about. And I think that this is true with UFO news stories and breaking news stories. I think that they get it so wrong. It's no surprise to me why a lot of people in the general public, probably not the majority of Coast listeners and not the majority of people that go to theblackvault.com, but I think a lot of people that you would walk up to on the street, that's all they have to gauge their beliefs in, and that's what the boob tube told them. You know, well, the news said it, so it had to be true. Well, take it from me, in this particular case alone, almost everything across the board was wrong, and we're talking about major media outlets. I won't throw any of them under the bus, but you can easily Google it, see who ran the story, and look how many used the exact same version, which was absolutely wrong. And I think that that's something that we really have to consider for the general public, that we have to get beyond the inaccuracies in journalistic reporting nowadays, because it used to be, well, there was just some dot-coms that were fake and the rest were pretty legitimate. I just don't think that's true. I don't know who to trust anymore when it comes to it. I mean, it's like we have to investigate everything, not to do a callback to the X-Files, but trust no one. You just can't.
No, you really can't. Government, when and if many people think, will they disclose? I think they never will, John.
I'm with you there. I've been fairly open about that in the last couple of years, that I just don't think disclosure in the sense that they will come clean and say, yes, UFOs are extraterrestrial in nature, yes, we've known about them, and yes, we've been lying. I don't think they will do that, at least not in our lifetime. They don't have to. I think with the media, and I don't mean to keep talking bad about the media, but forgive me on that, but I think with a lot of the mainstream media outlets, when you put the jokes at the end of the news story, when you have the inaccuracies out there, you know, the majority of the people that should be kind of waking up to that reality or at least thinking about it or thinking about the possibility, they're just not. They're not even looking that direction because, again, you just have so much negative stuff out there, you know. And when it comes down to it, it's not really a joke. I mean, it really is a major topic that we as the human race should really consider, you know, and really should openly talk about. But it's become such this, like, oh, you can't touch it. No politician will touch it. Very few and rare occasions when a politician may speak the word UFO. But, you know, and then those stories live for decades. So that'll tell you, you know, how rare it is when they touch the topic. So, you know, going back to your point, unfortunately, I just don't think disclosure in that sense is going to happen. But, you know, my motto on the site right now is redefining disclosure. And why I made that motto right now is that I think that we have to redefine the definition of disclosure, that the truth really is out there to find, but we have to care enough to take a little bit of time to look for it. When skeptics want to come around and say, well, UFOs aren't real, the government isn't covering it up, you guys are grasping at straws, well, they literally have never filed a Freedom of Information Act request in their life, nor have they taken the time to look at the struggle it takes to get out this UFO information. And if they would, I think a lot of them would start to realize, not necessarily, oh, these are definitely extraterrestrials, I'm a believer. It's not about that. I think, though, that they would come around and be more open to the possibility, be open to the idea. And I think that that's the point where we have to get to. And for whatever reason, we're just not getting there. And so that's what I'm one of the aims of the site is to just redefine disclosure. Disclosure is kind of within us. It's kind of up to us to take a little bit of time and go out there and ask those tough questions, whether it be to the government or whether it be to a UFO eyewitness or whether it be asking a tough question to yourself. But that's what we have to do as a society to kind of wake up to this reality and realize there is much more that's out there that we just have no idea about. And that's why I run a lot of stories that I do, especially with science, because science is rewritten every 11 and a half minutes. I mean, every 11 and a half minutes, it's completely rewritten. There's a brand new discovery. There's something amazing out there. And that's Earth science. You know, that's what we just don't understand or comprehend here on Earth. And yet there is so much out there beyond Earth. It's just you just can't even comprehend it. And that never ceases to amaze me. And I think that that's one of the things that drives me the most is just how much we simply do not know, no matter how smart we really want to believe we are.
You know, would you consider yourself in the same category of an Edward Snowden or a Julian Assange?
No. appreciate that question, though. That's a good one. But no, I don't. I am an American born and raised. I am very proud of the country I live in. I'm not always happy with the past, the secrets, or the conspiracies, but I am very proud to be an American. And when you start leaking information, there has to be a line. And this more so goes to Assange and his organization putting the documents out there that he did. When you start threatening national security, there's a difference between threatening national security and exposing potentially some secret information, but the public should know. And I think that's the line that we have to figure out. Where is it? What should we know? But also, we have our nation's secrets, and some of those should be maintained. And I'm a believer in that. As much as I fight for information, I also operate off the assumption that if it is a threat to our national security, if it is a threat to our nation in America, then they're not going to give it to me. And I think that I have been a believer in that for 17 plus years, that those nation secrets should be kept. So I don't consider myself in the same league. What I do is legal. I get the documents legally and directly from the government. These are not leaked documents. And what's funny to me, maybe funny is the wrong word, but that's one of the most common rebuttals to somebody who doesn't want to believe that these documents are real. And that is, I faked them. And I find so much humor in that because there's no way that I would be able to fake these documents. But on top of that, it really shows me how valuable some of these pages really are. Is the minute that accusation goes out there that I faked them, then I know that I got something pretty good. And anybody can verify these documents. I'm no one special. It's not like I got them and no one else can. Anybody can get them under the Freedom of Information Act. So that is one of the big fundamental differences between the leaked information or a leaker and Julian Assange versus the blackvault.com is, again, I try and keep it legal, keep it real, and trust that our nation's secrets, which I do believe we should be keeping some of them, will remain just that, a secret.
Why would they, John, put vital information in any Freedom of Information Act disclosure? I mean, don't you think they'd cover that up still?
Well, yes, and I think that they do in large part. I think a lot of information is still covered and kept and not released. And it makes you kind of question why. Now, if I was filing a request on a biological weapon secret and half of it was blacked out, well, it doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure it out that that's the national security and that's, a threat to the nation if they were to release those secrets. But if you do a request on UFOs and half of it, three quarters of it comes back blacked out, what is such a threat about national security on that? And that's what I don't get, is that there's certain topics which I understand should be blacked out, but there's other ones like the UFO topic that are considered the highest level of classification in our government. They're considered top secret. The documents that aren't supposed to exist that I reference, I mean, these are decades after the government claimed that they have no interest in UFOs. So why is that? Why couple the two together? On one hand, why are they going to lie? But then add in the fact that they're lying about a top secret, heavily classified threat to our national security. And it's all about UFOs. And I think that that's a very big unanswered question. And I don't know if I'll ever be able to answer that one until they finally disclose if that ever is going to happen. But I think that that's a big point that, again, a lot of people miss, that you can't lie about something and not have it be something. So there's definitely something to this phenomena. The government is definitely covering it up. There's no way around it. You can prove beyond any shadow of a doubt that the United States government is lying about it. And even just recently in the last year, got caught in a big blunder when the Huffington Post was profiling some of the documents on the Black Vault.
That was Lee Spiegel's column, right?
Yeah, yes, sir. Yeah, and he's an amazing journalist.
He sure
I've been friends
is.
With him for quite a few years. And he was doing a story on some of the documents that I had come out with, and one of them was one of the pieces of the puzzle that I've been kind of vaguely referencing, which was a United States Air Force manual, specifically 10-206, in case there's any military experts out there, that specifically talked about unidentified flying objects and how to report them. Now, to kind of summarize my research, and it took a couple of years, I found and have the documented proof that the NORAD installation at Peterson Air Force Base really either lied to me about the existence of the documents or lied to me that they did what they call an exhaustive search, but said that they found no documents that pertain to these sighting reports that were made under this Air Force manual. Now, why did I go to NORAD? Well, the manual said if you see a UFO, and there was a couple other things on the list, but if you see a UFO, you send it to Peterson Air Force Base. And so that was kind of the receiving agency. Well, they also told me that they weren't subject to the Freedom of Information Act because Canada had some control over the NORAD installation, so U.S. law did not apply. And so I thought that that was an amazing coincidence that the one place that they happened to send the UFO records was not subject to the Freedom of Information Act. Now, I eventually got and now have available on the blackvault.com literally hundreds and hundreds of pages of these UFO type records, but I got them through the Canadian government, right? So that proved the lie. So back to the Huffington Post story. Now, Lee Spiegel was profiling this Air Force manual 10-206, and being a good journalist, wanted to get the Pentagon's point of view. Now, we're not talking about a manual or a procedure that has been on the books for decades. This is something that was last edited from my research in like 2008. So we're talking about a very recent instruction for the Air Force and Air Force military pilots to follow. And UFOs, unidentified flying objects, was listed as one of the things that pilots will see and how to report them. And he made the call to the Pentagon and, of course, left a message, didn't get a call back. So he went back online and was researching because I showed him how to get the manual, not only from me. You actually download it from the Air Force's website if you know where to go. And I showed him that. And so he goes back to download it, and the entire thing was different. It was changed, completely rewritten. And he thought he made a mistake, or excuse me, I actually thought he made a mistake.
But he didn't.
Not at all. And the manual was completely changed, and it was changed. The publication date was about 48 or 72 hours after he made the initial phone call. And I believe he did get an explanation that it was purely coincidence that they were updating the file, and that was in the plan. So here was a major media outlet finally profiling black and white proof that the Air Force was still interested, still reporting UFOs, still on the books. He was able to prove it. And 24, 48, 72 hours after he made that phone call, they completely omitted that chapter, rewrote it, and it doesn't exist anymore. The publication date was, again, a couple days after he made the call, and that was it. The only explanation he got was that was a coincidence. And, you know, when you deal with that one story, you can't tell me that that was a coincidence. If you look at the history of the manual, it was updated multiple times throughout the last 10 years. They had more than enough time and opportunity to take UFOs out of it. Never did. And then all of a sudden, a major media outlet was going to ask that question and ask that question, and then boom, it was gone.
John, when we come back, I want to ask you what some of your favorite things are in the Black Vault, and then we'll take some phone calls with you on Coast to Coast AM.